Chapter 20. Having to meet her in church without her bonnet, but it is doubtful if his mind that night were less disturbed with the question how to guide himself out of the natural course which his passion for Ethelberta might tempt him into than was Lady Wells by his ardent wish to secure her. About the time at which Nay and Lady Well parted company, Christopher Julian was entering his little place in Bloomsbury. The quaint figure of Faith, in her bonnet and cloak, was kneeling on the hearth rug endeavoring to stir a dull fire into a bright one. "What, Faith, you have never been out alone?" apostrophe he said. Faith's soft, quick-shutting eyes looked unutterable things, and she replied, "I have been to hear Mrs. Peterwin's storytelling again." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and walked all the way home through the streets at this time of night, I suppose. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, nobody molested me, either going or coming back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Faith, I gave you strict orders not to go into the streets after 2 o'clock in the day, and now here you are taking no notice of what I say at all. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the truth is, Kit, I wanted to see with my spectacles what this woman was really like, and I went without them last time. I slipped in behind, and nobody saw me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't think much of her, after what I have seen tonight, apostrophe said Christopher, moodily recurring to a previous thought. Why? What is the matter? Apostrophe, I thought I would call on her this afternoon, but when I got there I found she had left early for the performance. So in the evening, when I thought it would be all over, I went to the private door of the hall, to speak to her as she came out, and ask her flatly a question or two which I was fool enough to think I must ask her, before I went to bed. Just as I was drawing near she came out, and, instead of getting into the brougham that was waiting for her, she went round the corner. When she came back a man met her, and gave her something, and they stayed talking together 2 or 3 minutes. The meeting may certainly not have been intentional on her part, but she has no business to be going on so coolly when in fact, I have come to the conclusion that a woman's affection is not worth having. The only feeling which has any dignity or permanence or worth is family affection between close blood relations. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and yet you snub me sometimes, Mr. Kit. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and, for the matter of that, you snub me. Still, you know what I mean, there's none of that off-and-on humbug between us. If we grumble with one another we are united just the same. If we don't write when we are parted, we are just the same, when we meet there has been some rational reason for silence. But as for lovers and sweethearts, there is nothing worth a rush in what they feel. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Faith said nothing in reply to this. The opinions she had formed upon the wisdom of her brother's pursuit of Ethelberta would have come just then with an ill grace. It must, however, have been evident to Christopher, had he not been too preoccupied for observation, that Faith's impressions of Ethelberta were not quite favorable as regarded her womanhood, notwithstanding that she greatly admired her talents. 22. Ethelberta's house. Ethelberta came indoors one day from the university boat race, and sat down, without speaking, beside Piketty, as if lost in thought. "Did you enjoy the sight?" apostrophe apostrophe said Piketty. "I scarcely know. We couldn't see at all from Mrs. Belmaine's carriage, so two of us very rashly agreed to get out, and be rowed across to the other side, where the people were quite few. But when the boatman had us in the middle of the river he declared he couldn't land us on the other side, because of the barges, so there we were in a dreadful state tossed up and down like corks upon great waves made by steamers till I made up my mind for a drowning. Well, at last we got back again, but couldn't reach the carriage for the crowd, and I don't know what we should have done if a gentleman hadn't come sent by Mrs. Belmaine, who was in a great fright about us. Then he was introduced to me, and I wonder how it will end." Apostrophe, apostrophe, was there anything so wonderful in the beginning then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. One of the coolest and most practiced men in London was ill-mannered towards me from sheer absence of mind, and could there be higher flattery? When a man of that sort does not give you the politeness you deserve, it means that in his heart he is rebelling against another feeling which his pride suggests that you do not deserve. Oh, I forgot to say that he is a Mr. Ney, a nephew of Mr. Doncastle's, who lives at ease about Piccadilly and Pall Mall, and has a few acres somewhere, but I don't know much of him. The worst of my position now is that I excite this superficial interest in many people, and a deep friendship in nobody. If what all my supporters feel could be collected into the hearts of two or three, they would love me better than they love themselves. But now it pervades all and operates in none. ... but it must operate in this gentleman? ... well, yes, just for the present. But men in town have so many contrivances for getting out of love that you can't calculate upon keeping them in for 2 days together. However, it is all the same to me. There's only but let that be. ... what is there only? ... said Piketty coaxingly. Only one man, ... murmured Ethelberta, in much lower tones. I mean, whose wife I should care to be, and the very qualities I like in him will, I fear, prevent his ever being in a position to ask me. ... is he the man you punished the week before last, by forbidding him to come? ... perhaps he is. But he does not want civility from me. Where there's much feeling, there's little ceremony. ... it certainly seems that he does not want civility from you to make him attentive to you, said Piketty, stifling a sigh, for here is a letter in his handwriting, I believe. ... you might have given it to me at once, said Ethelberta, opening the envelope hastily. It contained very few sentences. They were to the effect that Christopher had received her letter forbidding him to call, that he had therefore at first resolved not to call, or even see her more, since he had become such a shadow in her path. Still, as it was always best to do nothing hastily, he had on second thoughts decided to ask her to grant him a last special favor, and see him again just once, for a few minutes only that afternoon, in which he might at least say farewell. To avoid all possibility of compromising her in anybody's eyes, he would call at 6:30, when other callers were likely to be gone, knowing that from the peculiar constitution of the household the hour would not interfere with her arrangements. There being no time for an answer, he would assume that she would see him, and keep the engagement, the request being one which could not rationally be objected to. There read it. ... said Ethelberta, with glad displeasure. Did you ever hear such audacity? Fixing a time so soon that I cannot reply, and thus making capital out of a pretended necessity, when it is really an arbitrary arrangement of his own. That's real rebellion, forcing himself into my house, when I said strictly he was not to come. And then, that it cannot rationally be objected to, I don't like his ationally. ... where there's much love there's little ceremony, didn't you say just now? ... observed innocent Piketty. And where there's little love, no ceremony at all. These manners of his are dreadful, and I believe he will never improve. ... it makes you care not a bit about him, does it not, Berta? ... said Piketty hopefully. I don't answer for that, said Ethelberta. I feel, as many others do, that a want of ceremony which is produced by abstraction of mind is no defect in a poet or musician, fatal as it may be to an ordinary man. ... mighty me. You soon forgive him. ... Piketty, don't you be so quick to speak. Before I have finished, how do you know what I am going to say? I'll never tell you anything again, if you take me up so. Of course I am going to punish him at once, and make him remember that I am a lady, even if I do like him a little. " "How do you mean to punish him?" " said Piketty, with interest. "By writing and telling him that on no account is he to come." "But there is not time for a letter." "That doesn't matter. It will show him that I did not mean him to come." At hearing the very merciful nature of the punishment, Piketty sighed without replying, and Ethelberta dispatched her note. The hour of appointment drew near, and Ethelberta showed symptoms of unrest. 6 o'clock struck and passed. She walked here and there for nothing, and it was plain that a dread was filling her. Her letter might accidentally have had, in addition to the moral effect which he had intended, the practical effect which he did not intend, by arriving before, instead of after, his purposed visit to her, thereby stopping him in spite of all her care. "How long are letters going to Bloomsbury?" she said suddenly. 2 hours, Joey tells me," replied Piketty, who had already inquired on her own private account. "There!" exclaimed Ethelberta petulantly. "How I dislike a man to misrepresent things. He said there was not time for a reply." "Perhaps he didn't know," said Piketty, in angel tones. "And so it happens all right, and he has got it, and he will not come after all." They waited and waited, but Christopher did not appear that night, the true case being that his declaration about insufficient time for a reply was merely an ingenious suggestion to her, not to be so cruel as to forbid him. He was far from suspecting when the letter of denial did reach him about an hour before the time of appointment, that it was sent by a refinement of art, of which the real intention was futility, and that but for his own misstatement it would have been carefully delayed. The next day another letter came from the musician, decidedly short and to the point. The irate lover stated that he would not be made a fool of any longer. Under any circumstances he meant to come that self-same afternoon, and should decidedly expect her to see him. "I will not see him," said Ethelberta. "Why did he not call last night?"
"Because you told him not to," said Piketty.
"Good gracious, as if a woman's words are to be translated as literally as Homer. Surely he is aware that more often than not no is said to a man's importunities, because it is traditionally the correct modest reply, and for nothing else in the world. If all men took words as superficially as he does, we should die of decorum in shoals."
"Berta, how could you write a letter that you did not mean should be obeyed?"
"I did in a measure mean it, although I could have shown Christian forgiveness, if it had not been. Never mind, I will not see him. I'll plague my heart for the credit of my sex."
To ensure the fulfillment of this resolve, Ethelberta determined to give way to a headache that she was beginning to be aware of, go to her room, disorganize her dress, and ruin her hair by lying down, so putting it out of her power to descend and meet Christopher on any momentary impulse. Piketty sat in the room with her, reading, or pretending to read, and Ethelberta pretended to sleep. Christopher's knock came up the stairs, and with it the end of the farce.
"I'll tell you what," said Ethelberta in the prompt and broadly awake tone of one who had been concentrated on the expectation of that sound for a length of time, "it was a mistake in me to do this. Joey will be sure to make a muddle of it."
Joey was heard coming up the stairs. Piketty opened the door and said, with an anxiety transcending Ethelberta's, "Well?"
"Oh, will you tell Mrs. Peterwin that Mr. Julian says he'll wait?"
"You were not to ask him to wait," said Ethelberta, within.
"I know that," said Joey, "and I didn't. He's doing that out of his own head."
"Then let Mr. Julian wait, by all means," said Ethelberta. Allow him to wait if he likes, but tell him it is uncertain if I shall be able to come down. Joey then retired, and the two sisters remained in silence. I wonder if he's gone, Ethelberta said, at the end of a long time. I thought you were asleep, said Picotee. Shall we ask Joey? I have not heard the door close. Joey was summoned, and after a leisurely ascent, interspersed by various gymnastic performances over the handrail here and there, appeared again. He's there just the same. He don't seem to be in no hurry at all, said Joey. What is he doing? Inquired Picotee solicitously. Oh, only looking at his watch sometimes, and humming tunes, and playing rat-a-tat-tat upon the table. He says he don't mind waiting a bit. You must have made a mistake in the message, said Ethelberta, within. Well, no. I am correct as a general thing. I just said perhaps he would be engaged all the evening, and perhaps he wouldn't. When Joey had again retired, and they had waited another 10 minutes, Ethelberta said, Picotee, do you go down, and speak a few words to him. I am determined he shall not see me. You know him a little, you remember when he came to the lodge? What must I say to him? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.